This is Harry McDonald, a member of Pasadena Unit Number 12 of Understanding Incorporated. I would like very much to be with you at this moment to tell you something about Understanding, also about Major Wayne Aho, the man who gave the following lecture to the members of Pasadena Unit the latter part of September 1960. But we'll have to settle for this method to talk to you this time. Understanding Incorporated, as some of you already know, was founded by Dr. Dan Fry under the guidance of Allen, one of the extraterrestrial beings, for the purpose of a better understanding among all the peoples of the earth and those who are not of earth. To provide true and practical solutions to those great basic problems which presently threaten the happiness, the welfare, and existence of humanity upon the earth. To promote and encourage a complete and precise determination of the causes of said problems, which, when achieved, leads directly to clear understanding thereof, opening the way to practical solution. And to chart the total area of mutual agreement in the social sciences today, that is, to determine the total number of basic postulates and tenets designed to guide the behavior of man toward his fellow man, which are accepted as valued by all races and creeds upon the earth today, by which process results comparable to phenomenal developments achieved by the same process long practiced in the field of physical science, may also be achieved, and to chart in like manner the area of worldwide agreement in the spiritual sciences, by means of which to achieve a rapid advance to understanding of the true goal of life and in the practice of right relationships, and to engage in scientific and other research study, analysis, and investigations of any and all things and in any and all fields in an endeavor to obtain new, greater, and advanced knowledge. The establishment of truth for all the betterment, improvement, encouragement, and advancement of mankind and its posterity. We feel it is not necessary to give up our birthright, given to us by God. We feel that this would be giving away the Christ consciousness. This we can never do. We know it is not necessary to bow to any man or thing. We are equally confident that with the help of the God within us and the extraterrestrial beings coming to us by, if you will, flying saucers, we can do something about these chaotic conditions. I will quote an editorial from our November magazine of Understanding by Dr. Fry, and I quote, "Moving the world, many members of organizations which are devoted to the improvement of man's lot and to uplifting of his consciousness often experience a depressing sense of inadequacy. It appears that their efforts are of no avail, that the inertia and the apathy of the world is so tremendous that no individual or group could possibly have any effect upon it. I have often wondered how many of these people have ever watched a pair of tugboats take a giant ocean liner out of the harbor. When the tiny tugs come chugging up to the mammoth bulk of the liner, they appear almost as two flies approaching an elephant. It seems almost conceited of the tugs to think that they could ever move such a tremendous mass. The towing lines are drawn into place and form foam spurts from the stern of each of the tugs as their tiny propellers churn the water. The observers watch the ship for what seems to be a long time and nothing happens, just as he is coming to the conclusion that a mistake had been made and that the tugs will never be able to start the ships. His eyes detect a minute, an almost indistinguishable motion. The great ship is actually beginning to move. As the tug's engine continue to labor, the ship slowly but surely gathers speed and is eventually escorted clear of the harbor and into the open sea, where its own giant engines may safely be put to work, and the ship is well and truly on its way to distant ports. The task of understanding is much the same. The impatient reformer who is determined to change the world at a single stroke comes charging headlong against the inertia of the world and receives only a bruised head in payment for his efforts. It is a consistent, gentle, patient, but unyielding tug which will move the world and mold the destiny of man. You too can do something about it. We invite you to become a part of understanding, not because you need us, but because we need you. Major Wayne Aho is a retired officer of our armed forces, a man of great wisdom and understanding, who has devoted his life to bringing us a better world to live in, and all without any material remuneration. He is known and loved in very high places and those little people who will shape most of our new world. I have had the pleasure of working with Wayne and following him into many communities over the country, and find that he leaves a trail of love and understanding so badly needed this day. This tape was created by Pasadena Unit No. 12 of Understanding for one purpose only, that is to get this message to all who care to listen. We care not who hears it, we ask only that it is changed in no way, either by addition or subtraction. Also handled with care, we hope to reach many people. Two, do not let it lay on a shelf somewhere. After you have run out of listeners, send it on to some other interested people or return. I now present Major Wayne Aho.
Much pleased Twitchell and good evening friends of Pasadena. It is a pleasure to me to address you here this evening and bring you some of the facts about the UFO field and the expanded consciousness that is coming to Earth. And I'm happy to see my brother Art, who is in the audience this evening, who has also been working in the field of science, basic science, and lecturing in this field. It's not very often that our pathways cross, except here and there, and tonight is one of the times. So, good evening, Art. Now, this evening, I'm going to bring to you some of the important things that are developing in this nation and in the world. How all of these things are a confirmation of biblical prophecy, and how these spacecraft are also a part of this. I knew way back about 1956 when I first began looking into this subject because of biblical references that I read. You might say that some of this biblical reading was being guided, although I did not fully realize the significance of it at that time. I found many tie-ins, and I have always understood this subject to be a confirmation of prophecy, although many groups, perhaps many lectures, have not bringing this forth. I feel that the flying saucer subject is far more than just a discussion of sightings, what color the craft were, what direction they were going. And as some are maintaining or have said, that these craft will only make touchdown landings and then take off again, that they have not contacted anyone, there's no evidence to indicate that they have actually contacted anyone. I have known long ago that this is a very immature concept, that any advanced intelligence, I don't care what planet they were from, even if the lowly Earth were now trying to visit Mars or Venus, one of the first things they would do is try to make contact with someone. We wouldn't travel all that distance through space, arrive there, and make a little touchdown landing like a football skipping off the ground, and then take off again. Things of this nature to me are nothing but stupidity. And it shows a lack of understanding and comprehension in the minds of many people, usually caused by a sort of concentration on the physical and material only. Many people think that these crafts will only bring us scientific know-how. They would only bring us a new invention or a new radio or something and prove to us that they are here. Actually, I think that they're not trying to prove to the hard-headed ones at all that they are here. They have come and have reached persons who have been able to expand their understanding to the point where they would try to comprehend what this is all about. And it is far more than merely sightings and touchdown landings. It is one of the most significant and important things of the ages that has happened to the Earth for thousands of years for those who try to understand it. For those who do not try to understand it, it doesn't mean very much. Some people have seen the craft and have then dismissed it from their minds. They have gone home and said, well, now, apparently there's something to this. And they have not done anything more about it. I have met many such people. I've talked to them in various parts of the nation. I would ask, well, doesn't it mean something to you now that you have seen the craft or seen aircraft chasing them, trying to fire upon them or crash into them? And they would say, no, it is, that's all the interest I have. It says, I know there's something about it, but I'm not interested in reading any books or doing anything about it. I would say that there is something in the consciousness of some people that has attracted them especially to this subject. And when they begin to understand the whole pattern, they will find that it is a subconscious impression and memory recollection of earlier times when they have known much more about this situation than we know now. That our memories have been blanked out over a period of thousands of years of time. And that since this memory has not been fully restored, we have just what you call a main, a sort of yearning, a sort of desire to be close to this subject, although we do not realize the full significance of this yearning. I too have felt much of this, as many of you have, I know. And to me, it has been bearing greater and greater fruit, possibly because I have been devoting my full time in this work. I'm not working in this field for what you call material motives. May be a part of some of the people's activities, but for me, it has not been. We still need to live in a material world, but I understand that many of the things will change upon the earth, gradually to the point where we look not against or at the material first. We look to spiritual development first and the comprehension of all things. And as Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all things shall be added. Many people concentrate their attention in their lifetime just the opposite way around. They would work for a lifetime doing various things in the material way, and then when they get to be 60 or 65 years of age, they decide, well, now I better look into something else. I'm getting along toward the end of that road, and I wonder what's going to happen afterwards. I would say that there is a great need for all of us, men, women, and children, to begin to explore and examine the greater things in our lives, devote ourselves in a greater way to the service of the Father's plan and the Father's kingdom. When we do, we will find that there are wonderful things do happen in our lives. But we must first trust. We must realize that this supreme intelligence, this supreme creator that created all that has ever been created, knows everything that is going on, even within our minds, that there is nothing hidden. Everything is known. If we have even a particle of a doubt in our minds about what we are here for, or we doubt that there is anything more intelligent than man on the earth, why, that doubt is known. And a person is not ready to make greater steps until they have proved within themselves that they have already completed what you might say the earth cycle. And as Jesus brought out again, he said, I have overcome the world. Meaning that he was not controlled by the world system, race, consciousness, or belief. He had overcome all of this. This is a task that all of us are facing individually in our lives. Every one of us, whether we admit it or not. We are faced with this problem of overcoming all of the weaknesses, the frailties, all of the things of this world, and establishing ourselves a higher understanding and know-how which comes from on high. There's not one thing that we have that didn't originate from this one creator. I don't care whether it's wisdom, whether we call ourselves intelligent, I don't care what we call ourselves. Everything is from one source. And as we realize that, then we can begin to live greater lives. I have consistently tried, especially since 1956, some before that time, I became interested in such things as mental telepathy about the year 1953. I began to realize that it would work, that it could work, and that it was a science. I began to practice and learn more about it. About the year 1956, I began to have some astounding experiences that were almost shocking in some ways. I was shown some things that indicated that our whole civilization is in great danger and great stress. This was indicated even more when the craft landed upon the Mojave Desert on May 11th of 1957. I was shown that our civilization is on the very brink of disaster, and that only the spiritually motivated people could guide this civilization through the critical times ahead. This was not what you call exactly a pleasant experience. It was an experience that might say, you might say was fulfilling. Something was fulfilled. It was like an initiation experience, and it was very personal indeed. I have tried to bring some of these things out in various places and groups to try to help people understand out of it something that might help them. But I have found that even in space groups, there is a great deal of lack of understanding. That some people have said afterwards, people who were metaphysicians or had a metaphysical background, they have said, well, don't you know, he had a psychic experience, seeming to know more about it than even though they weren't there. The fact of it is that there were witnesses who saw the craft as I saw it, they checked the time of the landing, and they verified it the next morning as they returned from the desert and had breakfast with them. This was Mr. and Mrs. Sterling Turner of Santa Ana, California. Many of you may know them. They will verify this any time that they are asked, but they don't know exactly what happened out there. Only I know what happened. And some of it I don't still understand fully. I've been trying to understand. But the important thing is that these intelligences can contact us. They know who we are. They can monitor meetings like this, such as we have here this evening, and know what everyone is thinking. They know what I'm thinking. They hear what is said. And they are able to analyze the results of the meeting to know whether some good came from it and how they can then help those persons more who have sincerely turned out and tried to find out something that might be helpful to them in their lives. This intelligence, this wisdom that is involved is so profound and so fantastic that I don't know of any way even to describe it except to say that I have seen the proof of it. The craft that I saw land on the Mojave Desert on May 11 of 57 was first a star-like object twinkling in the heavens just like a star. I have had reason to believe even more since that time that probably the Star of Bethlehem was not a star flashing around up in the heavens, but it was an object of this nature, because this was twinkling just like a star, and it looked like a star, except that it was closer than the stars in the heavens. As I watched it, suddenly flashed an orange light. As I continued to watch it, thinking that now here is this star that flashes colors, it changed from a star-like object to a white egg-shaped lighted object, and it glided toward me without sound, coming in a beautiful sweeping motion across the sky. When it was directly in front of me and about a quarter of a mile away, it stopped and hovered for about 5 minutes. At this point, it turned into a red orb of light, completely round, about 22 to 25 feet in diameter. I kept walking toward it without any fear. I was out there for a reason, and I knew I was there for a reason, but I had no comprehension that I would see one of these objects when I first started out from the giant rock site. As I walked toward the object, I kept sending out these thoughts because I do believe that telepathy is a part of this, that we can communicate with advanced beings with our minds, that our minds are actually a more complete, more accurate, and better communication system than we will ever build with our hands in the field of television or radio, and that communication is two-way. It can go both ways. So I kept sending the thought out that you apparently are one of these ships, and I want you to land, and I want to see what's there. So I kept walking toward the craft, thinking, sending that thought forth. After about 5 minutes, the craft glided down to the desert and landed about 2 miles away. I walked down out to where the craft had landed. I actually saw it several times during the night after this. But I found after I got out there that the craft being there was only incidental, that there were many other things that were involved. And these other things that were involved were experiences that were of a personal nature. I was shown by symbols many things about our civilization and the times that we are in. And everything indicated a profound intelligence. They knew more about me than I know myself. The craft itself was not what you call a physical, third-dimensional craft. When some people will maintain, and I don't care who it is, that these crafts are only physical, that they're third-dimensional, and they're just like we are, and so forth. I have seen them, too, when they appear to be third-dimensional. They could have been photographed. They have been photographed in many parts of the world. But I have also seen them disappear right before my eyes, as though controlled by a rheostat type of power, to gradually fade out right before my eyes. This happened before a whole group of people at Kearney, Nebraska, on March the 5th, 1958, when one of these crafts disappeared before the eyes of hundreds of people watching in the streets. Now, I don't say that that indicates something supernatural. To me, that indicates that there are higher frequencies involved, that we are living in only one plane, or aware of one dimension with our eyes, and what we call our physical senses. But there are other dimensions, higher planes of activity. You might call them fourth or fifth dimension, or you might call them a higher frequency, higher octaves, things of that nature. And I feel that what happens when these craft disappear like that is that they increase their vibration of the molecular structure, and they gradually go into the higher octave or the higher frequency, and then they are really invisible to our eyes because we are sort of entrapped by this third-dimensional aspect or approach. I know that this has happened not once, but many times. I know that pilots have flown toward these craft. This happened over Houston, for instance, told by eyewitness accounts in that area, where three jet aircraft were approaching one of these craft that was going over the city of Houston, going toward the south. And apparently they had been alerted to go and fly after this craft or shoot it down or do something. Anyway, they approached this craft at high speed as if to fire on it or crash into it. We have heard some reports that Air Force pilots had had instructions to try to crash into these with their plane and then parachute out in the last minute, hoping that they could cripple one of these and get it to the ground and learn the secrets and the science of it. Now, this may be possible. I wouldn't doubt it at all that it has happened. But in this case, these people said these crafts, the jet planes, are going right toward it as if to crash into it. And suddenly the saucer disappeared right before their eyes. It just disappeared. And the jet planes took off in all directions. One of them, the pilot apparently, was so out of control by shock or fear or fright because of what happened, that he came down and went right over the rooftop of Bel Air, the southern part of Houston. The people complained bitterly to Air Force installations and newspapers and various places by phone, and the Air Force said later on that they had no idea who this pilot was. They couldn't find him. Of course, it's understandable to know what happened, but this pilot apparently was frightened by the fact that something disappeared right before his eyes. What do you do in a case like that? So apparently he lost control of his plane momentarily and came down and just practically crashed into the rooftops of the town. So these things do happen, and they have been happening, but it is not, again, something to be frightened about. It merely indicates that there is highly advanced technology involved, that these are intelligent beings. They know what we're thinking, they know what we're doing, and they're not afraid of us. They're not afraid of us. They don't come down here with fear in their hearts. They're trying to understand the things of this world and how this world situation might be benefited and changed to the point that at least a portion of our civilization might survive in the ensuing years. That we are actually in the time of the fulfillment of the prophecy of the scriptures. We are in that time, whether we want to accept it or not. And it will be proven so that within the 20 years that is immediately ahead of us, the prophecies will be fulfilled. And these crafts are a part of the fulfillment of that prophecy. Jesus pointed out in his instructions to the disciples and people of that time, especially the disciples, when he said, when you see signs in the heavens and in the earth, there are earthquakes in diverse places, wars and rumors of wars, then rejoice and know your salvation draweth nigh. Now we have been having these signs consistently since 1946 and 47, and they are continuing. All through my lecture tours, where I started new clubs in Montana, Idaho, Washington, and Minnesota and Wisconsin recently, there are new signings. They are continuous. A town in which I used to live at one time and work, Longview, Washington, where I was in the research department of the Longdale Lumber Company, also a Longdale City and Longdale Plant and City Fireman. I had been lecturing, was going to lecture in Portland and Woodland, Washington, and other cities in Washington State. So I called some friends that I knew in Longview, Washington, asking them to line up a lecture hall or find out where a hall might be available, YMCA, YWCA, etc. And they told me on the phone that they just were too busy with their clubs and societies. They had no time to do any phoning of this nature. I could understand very shortly that what the real problem was, that they just didn't want to be associated or connected in any way with spaceships. They wanted no part of it. So I was quite disappointed. I didn't know what places in the city to call, and I knew that I could spend quite a bit of funds that are hard to come by in this field anyway, trying to find a proper facility. So I went ahead and lectured in my hometown of Woodland, Washington, having one meeting in a range hall there and a second meeting in a private home. I lectured in Portland, Oregon, and went to Tacoma, Washington, and came back to Woodland, Washington for another meeting there in the home of William Mills, who is a Ford salesman in that city, who has a telescope, a 5-inch telescope, and he and his son, Jeff Mills, are highly interested in astronomy. As I was lecturing in that home that evening, I commented about the fact that people in Longview didn't seem to be innocent, and I was very hopeful that a space group might be started in the Longview Council Twin Cities area. One person attending the lecture said, "Well, do you know what's in the Longview paper tonight?" I said, "No." So they brought the paper forward. And here, the item read that the flying saucers had been over Longview the evening before, making two passes over the warehouse of plants. And a number of people had seen them. So I thought, well, here's the answer. It's not a hopeless situation yet. The next morning, before going anywhere else, or before doing anywhere else, I was on the phone again. And I called the police department, I called the National Guard Armory, until I finally located a place where a lecture might be held. The lecture was scheduled for Thursday of that week. And about 34 people turned out, because the Longview Daily News printed the item about the lecture, the radio station carried the news, and we were able to get the news out. It would have been, to me, an impossible situation had not these craft done something about it. But apparently they knew what was going on, and they knew of my disappointment, and so they sort of intervened. Not that I'm such an especially good speaker, or they like the way my nose curves, but apparently I was doing something sincerely to try to accomplish something in this field, and they recognized also sincerity. The time of the date of the sighting was June the 20th. It was printed in the Longview Daily News on June the 21st, the next day. And the lecture came on Thursday that week. And the interest has been mounting in that area. They now have a functioning unit, and I believe that there will be an understanding unit in that city. I appoint always in these cities where I travel, I appoint what I call a nucleus group, those who seem the most qualified and the most able to take on a leadership role, that appear to be sincere and devoted to doing something to raise consciousness, which is the real work of the field, is to uplift the consciousness of our people, of mankind. The reason that I recommend understanding in these various areas is because understanding has openly maintained and come out with a flat statement that they stand for the Christ consciousness. And I think that that is very important in this field, that there any group, any unit, anyone that has not yet connected the Christ consciousness with the coming of these spaceships, why they have lots to learn. And because of the fact that understanding has openly come out and made these statements on their printed literature, that this is what they stand for, and that this is part of this work. Therefore, I feel that as long as that is done, and that continues, that understanding is the best qualified organization to exert a worldwide leadership role in this field. Because I know that these craft are here for far more than just sightings or things of that nature. It was interesting to note from my lecture in Northern California at San Francisco that someone came forward with a clipping from a Cromwell, Massachusetts newspaper with a diagram of something else that has been seen in the sky. And some of you may want to look at this clipping afterwards. It is a drawing of a triangle, with a white light in one corner of the triangle, a blue light in the other, a white light in the other one, and a revolving red light in the center. So we now have flying triangles as well as what appear to be circular foil craft and cigar-shaped craft. All of these, to me, indicate more of the signs in the skies, because we were told, it was promised that we would have signs in the skies and in the earth. We are having all of this, and they are continuing. They have not come for a little while and stop. It has been a continuous program. There's the name of a witness in Southern California who says he has also seen in Southern California these flying triangles in the sky. I don't know of anything that could be construed more as being a sign than something like that flying in the heavens. A flying triangle, imagine. It takes intelligence to do these things, and there is a reason behind all of this. In my own work, I have seen many things. I have seen these crafts at least 13 times, as I mentioned. Since I have understood right from the beginning that we are faced with a psychological problem, in that people need to understand this in a way in which it does not seem to violate their consciousness, their conscience, that they can explore this a little by little and take a little bite or a little nibble of it and then gradually take a little more. I have seen the evidence of this all across the nation. For this reason, I stopped at 13 sightings, because I know that some people, were I to tell them that I had seen 25 or 50 craft or more, that would be just too many. Some people would get right up in an audience and say, "Well, I believe this man until he got up to 20 sightings. He claimed he had seen 20 of these craft." And he sounded very good until that point. And right from that point on, they closed their ears and said I would not listen to him anymore. So for psychological reasons, I stopped at 13. And I will remain there until I feel that it's psychologically safe to add some more of the sightings which I've already had. But we are faced with a psychological problem. We also have a responsibility in this field that we try to present this in the highest light possible. That we get away from wild approaches, from things that are nonsensical and things that people can't understand. I know that many people have had experiences that have been wonderful and profound to them. Some of these experiences, I would say, were for a personal reason, something to help awaken them to the fact that there is something going on, that they have also something to do in this New Age program that is developing. But it does not mean that everything needs to be told to the public. Some people think that when they get up to speak, they got to lay out everything, just like a carpet. They roll out the whole carpet, and whether there's dust or dirt on it or what, why, there it is. Now, how are people going to understand this? All of these complications, perhaps from their own lives. Why they might have been shown something specific, or they might have gone through an experience that is very difficult to understand, how would it affect that person, the other people? It might not mean anything to them. We need, I think, in this field, to present this in such a way that it will help people comprehend something worthwhile and uplifting, and that out of our personal experiences, we recount those things that might help other people understand that when they too have an experience, they don't need to go to see the psychiatrist or go to a mental hospital when they have such an experience. Many of these things have happened to people. It is a very difficult situation in a world as materialistic as this world is. The battle between the material elements and all of these things bring about what you might call a terrible shakeup in the consciousness and the minds of people. I know many people who, by reports, have gone to psychiatrists and told them about crap that they have seen. And that they were sent by friends or family or someone to see a psychiatrist or assigned to a mental hospital because of them. And some of them are still in the hospital. I don't think that that's the answer at all. Many of our psychiatrists, unfortunately, are people now who say that there is no soul in man, there is no God, and there is no Christ. Which I think is indicative of the fact that these people could not possibly understand a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening that many are going through. We are going through an Armageddon period, and this Armageddon extends to every individual. It extends to groups. It extends to every one of us. This Armageddon may eventually break down into even physical conflict between nations before this is over. It may very possibly do so. But this Armageddon is going on within each individual, and it is a fight within that individual whether the spiritual motives, forces, and powers, the highest things in that person can rule that person's life, or whether the other things, the emotions, the ego nature, and the lower virtues, the lower things are going to rule and control that person. And there is a fight going on. I have experienced this fight within myself, and I know that it is real. What we need to do is come out winner. Let the Christ be the winner in this battle, and turn all of our power and attention and concentration on the Christ part of us, on the Christ power. If we do not, this battle may go on to the point where it will end up in a stalemate, or perhaps set us on the wrong side of the fence. We are in the period of the time of judging of all of our nations and peoples. We are in that time. And every person is going to be judged. A part of this work, a part of the work in the flying saucers, for instance, in the space club, is this judging work, the judgment work. It is going on every day in the higher sense of the word, and it will be even more profound before this is finished. Now, many people have already won this battle within themselves. They have come out winners. But they still need to be on guard because attacks are still leveled against them. But you might say from psychic forces, from various invisible elements, and even from the physical plane around us. We need to be strong enough to be over and above the temptations of the emotional nature and the emotional world. Jealousies, hatreds, all things of that nature. If we cannot prove ourselves master over that, we have not won the battle yet. And we might have to go through the very difficult lessons that we have been going through upon the earth for thousands of years, and we might have to go through that whole cycle all over again. And who wants that? Who wants that when we have a golden opportunity right here, right now, to prove ourselves masters over this situation? Until we have proven ourselves, we have not won. and this must be done by each individual, every one of us. It cannot be done by other people. Each one of us must prove these things within ourselves. This is the battle. It's the battle of the ages. All of these things have been prophesied of old. The early day prophets all indicated that there will be a time of great tribulation, great trial and tribulation upon the face of the earth before the great and terrible day of the coming of the Lord. And we are in that time. It is right here. It is right now. And whether we are ready or not to face it, it is here. The 11th hour has come. There is no more time. There's no more time to dilly-dally around or say, well, I'm going to work now for Social Security or for this or that. I have some other things that I want to do first. And then perhaps if I see enough or someone knocks me on the head or one of these cracks comes down and knocks my hat off, then maybe I will look into this and begin to do something in a greater way. Some people have come up with ideas. I've heard these ideas expressed. They have spoken them to me. They said, well, you know, there are a lot of things that I could do. I'm very much interested in helping mankind. I have ability, I think. I have great talent. Perhaps public relations, a stockbroker or something else. And they say, you know, says, I could even retire. And it wouldn't hurt me one bit. I could even retire now and devote my whole time in this work. He says, if these pastors were really looking for people that would really help this world situation, why don't they let me see them? Why don't they come and land and talk to me? My answer to a person like that is that they are indeed looking at this from a short-sighted view. If they already know the need in the world, if they can see the things around us that all of us can see, and they must see them unless they're blind, then why aren't they already doing something about it? Why should an advanced intelligence come down and contact a person who has ability and should be doing something and isn't doing a blessed thing? What would be gained by such an experience? What would be gained? The ones with right intentions, the right motives, the right feelings within our hearts, the ones who are motivated by right principles will be the ones who can help the world now. Later on, those who are not yet sure of themselves, they don't know for sure what stand they're going to take or which side of the fence they're going to get on. They may come later, but they will come because of the work of those who have already begun to do something. Also, I feel that sometimes these cracks have come or have made themselves visible or have contacted various persons who were so immersed in the world situation, the materialism of this time, that they knew about something else about the backgrounds of those people. They knew that they were right intentioned, but they were all tangled up in this physical, material world. And because of the need, the great need that is apparent throughout the world, it's in the daily newspapers every day, right now. It wasn't as apparent to many people in 1957 or 56 or 1949. Many of us begin to feel these things. We begin to feel a great danger coming to the earth. And we are now seeing this danger taking form before our very eyes. But to help people get untangled from the physical, the material things of the world, it is possible that some of these crafts may come for that reason. It is not my purpose or intention to try to outline all of their motives. They know their motives. It is important for us to know our motives and make sure that our motives are right. When we do that, we also will be on the right track. We cannot judge always about the circumstances. We cannot judge always as to what happens in some situation in a person's life. If we knew the motive that brought that about, what that person was trying to do, even though perhaps they didn't succeed in that way, then we are again on the right track. And I feel that these beings, even as has been indicated in many of the books, that they don't judge people. How could they judge? If they try to understand the motives of people as to whether their motives were right, were intentioned in the right way in the first place. And if they had right motives, then they do try to help those people or that person. And if the judging comes to the results, look at the crazy things going on in this world every day. We start out sometimes with many right intentions and motives, but it sort of backfires on us. People are being put into jail. Various ones have told me that right now there are many in our jails. Our jails are full of people who are not guilty. They weren't intending to commit a crime. They either crossed someone, they got in someone's way, or they had money in their own family sometimes assigned them to a mental institution to get them out of the way so they could spend the money. So these things are happening because of the world situation, the confusion of this world. So there are many well-intentioned people, even in jail, in penitentiaries every day. We're living in what you might call a very confusing time. We have something like 40,000 accidents on our highways every year. We have more people in the United States dropping of cancer and heart disease than any country in the world, even while we have more doctors, more hospitals, and more nurses than any country in the world. What is wrong? If we have so much of this medical aid, how come our people are dropping faster and more so than in any nation in the world? Even as we see the evidence in this world of this time, that a group of people called the Hunzas in northern India, some 20,000 strong, have no doctors, they have no hospitals, they live by nature's way, eating their ground, the fruits and the vegetables grown in their own soil by natural methods. They don't even use chemical fertilizers. And they eat that food. They live to be 100 to 150 years of age and older. They can work in the fields until that age. They can give childbirth to children at the age of 100 years. And they have no cancer and they have no heart disease. They never heard of them. What is wrong? The indication is that we have gone off the beam. We have gone off the way. We are not following the Creator's way. And because we violate these things in our lives, we don't live by right principle always. We live by worry and confusion. Our minds are in a constant whirl about how we're going to pay our taxes or how we're going to do this and that and so forth, that we can't live what you call a balanced life. On top of that, we have all this smog, we have all this cigarette smoke, and all sorts of things that we have added to the situation. Drugs and narcotics and all sorts of things that people are taking into their bodies. And then they wonder what happens to the body. How come it can't support them? How come that it begins to fail? I would say that from what I have seen going on in this world, it is a miracle that anyone has any good health at all. It's a miracle that there is any kind of health at all. And I would say that God is indeed fantastically intelligent and powerful that we can even walk around in the confusion of this time. But we have gone so far away from some of these truths. Many people don't understand what is going on in the world today in the light of national and international events. They read things in the newspapers, they watch television programs. Sometimes after watching a television program, they go to a mental hospital. This has happened also, watching some of these crazy psycho programs that we have on TV, where you watch broken glass and spider webs and mirrors and crazy things that are meant to distort the mind. And I have actually heard of people who have gone to a mental institution after watching one of these crazy television programs. Many people don't understand that they're being brainwashed when they go to movies, that many of our movies are written by and presented by subversives. They are not to uplift consciousness. They are meant to confuse and twist the minds of people. They are attacking the American armed forces. They are attacking the American nation. They are attacking the highest principles of God the Creator. And everything good that was ever done. They've even gone to using titles such as heaven and angels and God. And all of the things would indicate to you that this is going to be something angelic and something beautiful and something profound. And the people go to those shows and they find that there's a terrible twist in it that has been put into the show. There's something that is laughing at God. It's laughing at anything wonderful and profound or spiritual or angelic. And it's a twist. It's a twist of the mind. This is done deliberately. We are faced with a time right now when we are engaged in probably the worst psychological struggle we have had assigned to us, directed toward us, the greatest program of psychological warfare that I think any nation has ever seen. And this is aimed against America and against the free world, but especially America, because America is a bastion of freedom of this free world. If America can be eliminated by confusion, by sickness, by disease, and by drugs, and all kinds of wrong ideas, then nothing more needs to be done. And as has been indicated by these who are engaged in this program of destruction, they have said, outlined, for instance, in the Soviet Union, way back in 1932, a three-point program in which Chief of Police Beria was telling American students who were over there, college professors, students, lawyers, nurses, doctors, who were over there to learn how to pervert and destroy this nation, they said, he said, first of all, we're going to destroy America without firing one shot. Number two, we will tax your middle class out of existence. And we are finding that that very thing is happening in America today. Our taxes are going higher and higher. Wars are propagated. And when these wars end, the taxes that were formulated to pay for that war are never repealed. They just go on and on. And we find that one of the first principles of the Communist Manifesto written by Karl Marx was, number one, we will formulate or develop a graduated income tax scale for every nation. And America got the income tax about 1913, after the Karl Marx material was being published in this country in the late 1800s. We got the graduated scale of income tax in 1913. Since that time, individual liberty has been fighting a losing battle, little by little by little. A creeping takeover of all individual liberty and individual control. It is indicated that they're not worried about the very rich because some of the biggest money in the world is behind this program of international conspiracy. Money can be controlled by money. People can be threatened. They can be told, well, now either you work with us or we will eliminate you. Your stocks and bonds will lose out. We'll just wipe you out. The very poor are so concerned with where the next day's food is coming from that they cannot be concerned with politics and things of that nature. I would say that our present political campaign, the fight that is going on within this nation for the survival of individual liberties, is probably the greatest danger time in our history since the days of the revolution. And one of the biggest dangers is that most people don't even know there's a danger. They're so apathetic now to the real situation that they don't even think there is any danger. Everything's sort of going along fine. To illustrate that, to show what is happening and what has been done with words, I was lecturing in Logan, Utah. There are a lot of people of the LDS faith, Latter-day Saints, or what used to be called Mormons, in that area. I was told that a college professor from one of the colleges appeared before a Kiwanis club in that region and gave a beautiful talk to this Kiwanis club. And he outlined a program of what you call ethics, ethical procedure in business and in government to this Kiwanis club. And it was a very finely presented talk. After the talk was over, he asked these Kiwanis members, he says, how many of you would vote for such a program? And they all raised their hands. Then he said, gentlemen, you have just voted for communism. Then he pointed out to them how in the modernistic communist principles, the way they're being presented to our American people and the people of this world, the old words have been changed. The old slogans have disappeared. There are new ones. And it's all ethics. Everything is ethical. Where everyone gets their cut. Everyone gets their little bonus or their cut. And everything's done by ethics in business and in government. And part of this is that every taxpayer must be a happy taxpayer. We must pay our taxes and pay them willingly and gladly and be very happy when it's all over, even though the taxes might go higher and higher. We're all going to be a bunch of happy taxpayers all over this nation. The third part of this program, the three-point program outlined in the Soviet Union, was that, number three, we will send you psychiatrists. You are to go back and tell your people that European psychiatrists are the best in the world. Educate them to this. Let them know that Europe produces the greatest psychiatrists in the world, so that when they come through your immigrations, etc., and if they speak in a foreign accent or broken tongue, your people will say, ah, I have a good psychiatrist. He can't even speak English. The American Legion, of which I am a member, also a member of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, I'm a past commander in the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the greatest patriotic organizations, including the Legion, have pointed out that now we have from 70 to 84% foreign-born psychiatrists practicing in America. And practically all of them came from Europe. What was the matter with our own colleges and our own universities? The answer is that we had to have a special breed of psychiatrists. And the special breed of psychiatrists are ones who come and say openly, or in various ways, veiled hints, and by a twist in their words, say that there is no God, there is no Christ, and man has no soul. Man is merely an animal, an advanced stage of the animal kingdom. He can be brainwashed. He can be made to do things by mind procedure, by psychological procedure. And they have set about on a program to prove this and make it happen in this world. Instituting a group of people who have selected themselves as the intelligentsia, of the future world, when peace would reign upon the world, but it would reign under their control, under a materialist society, where anyone who did not agree with this would be hospitalized or would have psychiatric procedure practiced upon him. And as was pointed out in the same document, the same teachings and classes, which is psycho-political procedure, to be practiced in the taking over America. Psycho-political procedure. It was pointed out by Beria that in your mental hospital, you have room for millions of your citizens, where they can have all of their constitutional rights denied to them, even more so than in a penitentiary. They have no rights whatsoever. And there, hypnosis and shockwave treatments can be practiced upon them until they cannot draw the same breath again. This is an elimination program of those who would be called enemies of society. Now, all these things are happening before our very eyes. The psychiatrists are here. The mental health programs are being instituted. We have seen nationwide rise in this direction. And many people would say, well, gee, that sounds good. We got to have mental health. And an idea is being formulated in the minds of many people now that you should go to see your psychiatrist at least once a month. Their fee is something like $20 or $25 an hour, but you should go and see them at least once a month. And school children, you know that psychiatrists are being assigned to public schools and to elementary schools and high schools, and that if a child breaks a pencil or steps on someone's toes, that many times they're sent to see the psychiatrist now. And then they come home with a slip of paper and said the parent now should come and see the psychiatrist. But this child is abnormal. There's something terribly wrong with them. They're confused and mixed up kids. And in one school, a teacher actually did this. And this was brought to me on my lecture tour right here in California. This was a preschool age child. They were not even in the first grade yet. It was first grade. And the parent got a call. This parent was working. This parent got a call and told her to rush to the school immediately. And she jumped in her car thinking that the child had lost his head or something had happened, something terrible had happened, that the end had come. And she arrived in great anxiety and consternation. She rushed to the teacher and said, well, what in the world has happened? So this pre-first grade teacher said to her that your child has eaten some pink paint. And it says, I have sent this child to the psychiatrist. And it is indicative of this very something very subconsciously wrong in the mind of the child. And it says, this is a terrible situation. And you must do something about it. So the parent said, well, gee, that doesn't sound very terrible to me. So she asked the child, and later on, says, what in the world? Why in the world did you eat that pink paint? Apparently, no one had bothered to ask the child why she ate it. She said, because it looks like strawberry ice cream. Something was terribly wrong in the mind of the child. Can you see how by insinuation and by planting ideas in the minds of the youth, of the children, how they can later on be affected to a point where, as was indicated in Ohio, Toledo, Ohio public school, this happened there by a mother who was alert. People should be watching these things, should be knowing what's going on to their children and in the public school. In this case, this mother said that her children came home from school quite disturbed. And she asked them, what in the world was wrong? They said, well, the teacher told us today that within 10 years, the mental hospitals will be so crowded with mental patients that some of them will have to be killed to make room for the others coming in. In the public school. In the public school, told to the children. Within 10 years' time, a prognostication of a future where people would actually be destroyed, their lives would be taken inside the hospital to make room for those trying to come in. In the public school. Done by a teacher. Now, we are engaged in a struggle upon this earth. We are in a struggle, and it is a real one. This struggle is for the very survival of the freedom of man in America. America is going to see the greatest attack leveled against this country we have ever seen. It is from the inside, and it is from the outside. Some of the worst of this is from the inside because many people fail to recognize what is happening. They won't accept it. Some people, after a lecture like this, have come to me afterwards and said, "Say, aren't you a communist? Did you talk like you're talking against something? You're talking against someone, or even the government." Others have told me, in the question and answer period after one of these lectures, about the spaceships, for instance, they have said, afterwards, they says, "Well," they sort of shrug their shoulders, you know, and says, they draw a deep breath, "and now they're going to give you the impossible question. They're going to show what a fool you are, and they're going to show what a wise man they are." And they says, "Well, wouldn't you think that if it was important for us to know about flying saucers, that the government would make it public and let us know about it?" And then they sort of let their breath go out, you know, and they're self-satisfied. Everything was fine now. They have presented the impossible question. My answer to a question like that has been and is, I said, "Brother, you have just made one of the most dangerous statements any American could make. You have already delegated your right to think for yourself to someone else, to an invisible something you can't even see, that you call the government. And according to the Constitution, the government has been and is the people of the United States. It is not a group of people. We elect people to Congress, but any time that we turn over these people, let them do anything they want to do, and we hold no rein on them, we are not Americans anymore. We are not abiding by the Constitution. We not only elect people into office that we think would serve our nation the best, but we watch every move they make, and if they don't do the right things, we get them out of here." The practice is, generally in America, unfortunately enough, is that when a name becomes popular, be it the name of Roosevelt or anyone else, people keep on voting for that name just because they have seen it so many times. You know what repetition of anything is, a continual repetition of something is? It's hypnosis. People have become hypnotized by names. They don't look and see what the voting records of these people are. They don't find out what they stand for, whether they stand for the America and their real Constitution, but they keep on voting them because they have seen their name on the ballot over and over again or in the daily press. They say, "Well, gee, he must be a good man. He's been there 2 times already. Might as well send him back. He must know more about the job than anyone else because he's already been there 2 times. You know that in California, in San Francisco, up in the Bay Area, college students from the University of California campus practically ran the House Un-American Activities Committee out of that area by picket, by picketing and by violence, right here in California, right here. And that the House Un-American Activities Committee is one of the groups that is still trying to fight to bring these things that are happening into the open. Also the Senate Internal Security Subcommittee. Two of the committees, I don't care how many committees would be disbanded, those would be the last to go because they're trying to bring out truth. Even at sometimes personal ridicule to the chairman of those committees, whenever they leave the Congress, they have a terrible time because they have been blackballed by these very elements that are trying to destroy America. Their name has been dragged through the mud in various ways. And you know that one of the famous names in our history of this time, James Roosevelt, from California, twice now the United States Congress has come up with proposals and campaigns to disband the House Un-American Activities Committee. Do you know that? Right from California. I would say, ladies and gentlemen, that we are going to be faced with a situation we are not going to be faced with. We are faced with it when we are going to have to reckon with everything we have, the highest wisdom and the intelligence we have, that is to hold this nation together against the elements that are trying to destroy. From my experience and what I have seen, whether you believe this or not, or want any part of it, I don't care. I have found the facts more for myself, and I am satisfied that this is what is going on, that there is a definite attempt to turn the black man against the white man and vice versa, to get them to be at each other's throats deliberately. That this is a part of a deliberate plan. And that out of all of this, whether it is economic chaos, or whether it is race riots, or what it is, if you get people fighting with each other enough, then through chaos, the conspiracy, which is communism, called communism, which is a very poor name for it, because it's an international conspiracy, takes over. And then they say, well, now you have demonstrated that you have nothing but race riots. You have all of these internal confusions. Nothing but poverty, because now we're going to liberate you, and we're going to set up a system of the people. But the people never have anything more to see about it. They just sort of, they can have a vote for one party, or they can select vote for a selected candidate. And that's the end of it. We are faced with a period of time right ahead of us where these people have been saying openly, or in hidden discussion groups, that they plan to have this nation taken over maybe as early as 1961. And that the way they are getting converts, people to join them, join in their cause. And there are probably more communists in the United States than there is in Russia right today. Possibly more. Is by going around and making promises, they say to this and that, they find a good-looking young girl who's having trouble getting a job or has a job but has other, maybe other greater aspirations. And they say to this girl or to this young man, they say, you know, what you're doing now, you say, you have great talent, you have great beauty, you have this and that and so forth. Says, if you will join with us, we will see to it that what you're making now in the way of money is chicken feed. And when the great day of the takeover comes, you will be one of the great ones. You'll be one of the main ones. One of the powers. You'll be head and shoulders above everyone else in your community. You'll be one of the bosses. And you know that many of our American youth and people are falling for this hook, line, and sinker. It's being used in political strategy. In this political campaign, it's already been used a great deal. It is used in politics. But this is being taken now as part of this program to encourage people to sell off their birthright. Now I would say that in this time of judgment, and we are in the time of judgment, anyone who sells out their birthright